We're speaking with Eric Mollenhauer, who's coming to South Haven on June 28th to talk about reconnecting with nature in a digital world. He's a retired teacher at the primary, secondary, and college level, and a longstanding environmentalist and volunteer. Eric, you say that we're facing an extinction of experience. What exactly do you mean by that?
I think that what's happening in the last few decades is we're becoming so addicted to what has been called virtual reality. And that's, of course, being driven by computers and the Internet. And I think, for me, the Internet and computers, they're important tools, but to believe that they can take the place of real experiences with the world is not only foolish but dangerous, because we need this world, and we need people to have real experiences, not vicarious experiences.
A few years ago, an author by the name of Richard Louv, who I'm sure you're familiar with, wrote a book called Last Child in the Woods, Saving Our Children from Nature Deficit Disorder. He was tying the lack of connection between children and nature to mental health and physical health issues. But your concerns go beyond that, apparently.
They do. I think that we have a deep physical, biological, emotional, and a spiritual need for nature that hasn't ever been really bred out of us. You know, in some respects, we've been domesticated like the animals that we have around us. But I think we still need direct experiences with nature to become and to remain fully functioning human beings. It's not just for the kids. It's for the adults as well. We need to get outside into the woods, into the meadows, and form a relationship with this planet.
What kind of activities are most effective, do you think, in fostering that connection?
I think I would suggest that the most important thing is for people to start right there where they live. Even if you live in the city, hopefully there's a park nearby, a creek to explore. If you live in the suburbs, perhaps there's a patch of forest. But I think that the experience we've had in education would show that kids form their first experiences with things close to home, and then you're knowledge of the world expands outward from that. So I would encourage people to take kids for a walk in the woods or a meadow right nearby and form a relationship with that. Home starts right there.
You're a member of the Gloucester County Nature Club there in New Jersey near Philadelphia where you live. And they recently did something called the Mad Hatter Tree Party Project. What was that all about?
It's a really interesting strategy for getting people outdoors. I recognize that everybody leads a very busy life, and that a lot of people are less and less comfortable with going outdoors. There's plenty of messages, whether it's Lyme disease or some other fear factor, to keep people from being outdoors. And certainly there's less and less people, kids going into things like Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts. So the natural world becomes sort of a foreign place to people. And what the Mad Hatter's Tree Party is a way of celebrating that little patch of forest in the community by blending together the whimsical aspect of Lewis Carroll's Alice in Wonderland, Mad Hatter's Tree Party, blending that with experiencing a walk in the woods. And so what we've advertised to people is just come out for an hour and a half in the afternoon on a nice day in the fall when the trees are changing and explore the forest. We'll have people there to help you understand what's going on, and you'll have fun with the kids, and they could dress up if they want to as Alice or the Mad Hatter. And so we have a blend of little music, a little Mad Hatter whimsy, and experiencing the forest. And I think that it's those little activities that people can say, well, yeah, I can do that. That'd be a great thing to do with my kids.
When you are able to pry the kids away from their various screens and digital friends, how do they react when they confront the the natural world? I mean, is there a lot of fear, or do they welcome it?
I think the kids react the same way that you and I and probably a lot of other people listening to this did when we were growing up. When we did this activity, it was through the forest beside a lake, and at one point the kids were listening to a dulcimer player, hearing a wood instrument that just drifted and echoed through the forest, and the next minute they were throwing stones into the pond just like you and I did. So I think, you know, for the kids, it's no different. They like to explore. They like to be outside. It's up to us as adults to find simple strategies to get them out there and work that into the daily hectic humble tumble of life.
And yet you say that kids, you know, the area in which they play by themselves has shrunk just incredibly over the last few decades. You know, is the digital world the primary culprit, or is something else going on?
Yeah, I think it's a lot of things, unfortunately. But I see in my own grandchildren that they don't roam the way I did and the way a lot of your listeners did as kids. I think they don't roam in part because the areas that were nearby are gone, the parks, the trees, the forests, and so on. It's been developed, but it's also the fear factor of like, oh, I don't know who's out there and what they might do. So the area of free play where kids roam has decreased, I think, by 75% in recent decades. And then just where kids spend their time and where we spend our time, I would challenge your listeners to keep a log for a week or two and see how much of their day is spent indoors versus how much is spent outdoors. And typically for kids, 90% of their time is spent indoors. And if you believe that we are what we eat, then what they're eating is indoor environments. And my theory would be that we need them to experience the outdoor environments to become healthy, fully functioning people.
And we've been talking a lot about kids, but do we need to do something about getting adults back into nature?
Well, absolutely. You know, we're in the midst of an obesity epidemic, and it's I find it so ironic that if there's exercise involved, people head into a building to do it. The indoor physical fitness places are just booming. But we know that if you take a walk in the forest, that the trees are giving off vapors that are actually good for you physically. And we also know that inside buildings, there are vapors being given off that aren't good for you physically. So, you know, I would encourage people, what we need to do as human beings is we were designed to move. I believe a lot in what a evolutionary biologist, Richard Dawkins, said. He has a theory called ecological anachronism. And basically, the ecological anachronism theory says you were designed for earlier times, for earlier conditions. So it shouldn't be a surprise that processed food is not good for you. It shouldn't be a surprise that if you sit in front of a keyboard and endlessly use your hands to do that, you get carpal tunnel syndrome. Your hands weren't designed for that. But what we were designed for was to be outdoors and to be moving. So people should get out there and get walking and experience the outdoors and move, constantly move.
And so we're not really all as different as we think we are from our ancestors 10,000 years ago.
I don't think so. I think that we delude ourselves to think that we've progressed that far. At the heart of Richard Dawkins' theory of ecological anachronism is that evolution for creatures like ourselves takes a while, not so much for bacteria, right? The bacteria can reproduce every 20 minutes or so. But for us, it takes years to reproduce. So we don't change very quickly over time. So we were designed to be those people living outdoors and having experiences. You know, what we're moving towards is less diversity. So all of our surfaces are made very flat inside the house and inside the malls and inside the physical fitness centers, so we won't trip over anything. But in reality, your body is designed to experience uneven surfaces, uneven temperatures, uneven wind environments, and to the extent that we create this lack of diversity of experience, it's not good for the human being, I think, either physically or emotionally or spiritually.
As you speak about these issues around the country, including in South Haven, as we've mentioned, do you find that people are receptive, and not only receptive, but actually plan to do something about it?
I think that older people perhaps are more receptive because we grew up before the advent of internet and cell phones, so we know what that life was like when you went outdoors and played all day and only came back when the dinner bell rang. And so I guess one of my great hopes is that the grandparents, especially of this country, before we leave the stage, will try to get the grandchildren out, to get the kids out, and have the kinds of experiences with nature that we had growing up.
In addition to your presentation in South Haven about the things we've been talking about, you're also going to be participating in a workshop about how to help the monarch butterfly. Briefly bring us, remind us what the issue is with the monarchs.
So I think a lot of people know that the monarch butterfly is essentially, it has an amazing story. It migrates from Canada and the U.S., Michigan, and spends the winter in Mexico, and then other generations come back and repopulate North America. It takes about 6 or 7 generations to complete the annual cycle involving the migration. It's a wonderful story showing that every generation needs to do their part. There's no one generation of monarch butterflies that makes the annual cycle work. And I think that's where we need to put our focus, that every generation has a responsibility to keep the planet healthy and to keep ourselves healthy. And we can't do one without the other. We have to have ways of getting people and kids reconnected to the planet so that we keep it healthy and keep ourselves healthy. I had an Ojibwe friend who passed away about a year ago. The Ojibwe are one of the native groups of people in the Great Lakes area. And she passed something on to me that I value and would like to add. She said that there were 4 things that worked together, kind of like a 4-legged stool. And if you kept all 4 of them, everything would stay in balance. Those 4 things were relationship, respect, reciprocity, responsibility. I think she's absolutely right, and I don't know which one of those is more important. We have to get people outdoors so that they can have a relationship with the trees, with the streams, with the forests, so that they can understand that we have a responsibility and we need to respect the planet and each other, and we need to give back. That's the reciprocity part. We need to give back. I think that one of the things that's so clearly lacking right now in the political game that we are playing is the lack of respect. I feel like I'm talking about Harry Potter and He Who Shall Not Be Named, Voldemort, or whatever his name was. But anyway, respect is the cornerstone, because without respect, you can't have relationship. You can't maintain a healthy system. So I would push us to get kids, get people outdoors, so we can learn respect for the system that keeps us alive and for each other.
We've been speaking with Eric Mollenhauer, who will be speaking about reconnecting with nature in a digital world. He's speaking on Tuesday, June 28th at 7:30 at Lake Michigan College's campus in South Haven. Eric, thanks so much for taking time to talk to us.
Thank you very much, Andy.